Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime. You're here with KK and Lo.
Hey, yo,
and
hey.
It was Lo's birthday yesterday.
Big 25, what?
Hell yeah.
Plus 20. But y'all didn't hear that from me, okay?
Lo, did you have a fun birthday?
I did. It was very nice. The husband made it a very special day. He made me the food that I wanted, which was Reuben's, because I didn't go out for St. Patrick's Day and he was out of town. So we didn't really get our corned beef Reuben fix. And I was going to do it the other day. But then Meyer was like, sorry, we've been out for a couple weeks. I'm like, y'all did some poor planning on corned beef then, because. Okay, so we finally found some at Kroger. I think they had like 3 pounds left. So Pat's like, just give it all to me. I'll take it all.
Dang, so, people go hard on that stuff, huh? I'm not a fan of it personally.
Okay, well, I don't know. If you ever tried one of Pat's Reuben's, you might be. He's good at that. He makes them
okay,
good.
Okay.
So we had that with waffle fries. That was my birthday dinner request.
Nice.
And he got me this really beautiful red velvet looking cake with cream cheese frosting.
Was it delicious?
It was. It was rich. And then we had Reese. It was just like peanut butter ice cream, which was also rich but delicious. And he got me a new Garmin watch, which was like, okay, which is good. I like it. I asked for it, so I was happy. But I want to kind of keep track of my sleep because, you know, I have funky things happen to me when I sleep.
Oh, yes, you do.
It happened the other night. And this one was like, maybe it was Brett. I don't know. But I feel like it was like a big, tall, partly Asian guy. Okay. Korean. Or what is he?
Like Chinese. Like, yeah.
Like Asian-ish, right? Is that what they?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, but it was at like the side of my bed, and I jarred awake. Like you can see on my bit that my heartbeat like went up high, and then it went back down. And I remember after I settled back in, I was like, "Was I dreaming about Brett?"
That's so funny.
It was so weird.
I'm like, did you visit Lo in her dreams?
I was just standing by my bed creepily.
Were you creeping?
So that happened. Even on my birthday, I get haunted, right?
That's so odd.
I know. So, I was kind of happy with my watch because I could see my heartbeat spike. And then we bought a new puzzle because that's what we do.
Nice.
And we didn't start it yet, but yep. It was very low key. It was very relaxing. He made the kids do the cooking and the cleaning and cleaned up after dinner, so I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
As you shouldn't have anyways.
Yep. So he took care of me. It was a good day.
So. Nice. And sounds like a relaxing, perfect kind of day then.
Yeah. And I always tell him, like, women get birthday weeks. He never believes me. He's always like, well, he does. He's always like, it should be just a day. But because then, like, today we went out for dinner because it was my sister-in-law's birthday. And then my son's birthday is on Monday. So we kind of did a big family thing today with them. And then Saturday, I get to spend it with my friends. So, I mean, it just,
it keeps going. As birthday, you know, like you said, it's the week.
It's more so when your birthday is during the week. I feel like you get the week. Like if my birthday landed on a Saturday, I probably could have crunched it into all in one day or maybe two, you know. But
that's why it's sometimes better during the week, because then it is kind of more extended.
Yeah. So, yep.
Yes, we're going to celebrate Lo on Saturday. I mean, you guys will be with us in spirit, but I'll be there in person.
Well, if you're hearing this on Sunday, if you were in Lake Orion at Wine Social, hey, we were either the really quiet old people in the corner or the hot mess people. We'll see how it goes.
We'll let you know next episode. That's funny.
I did buy after huffing and puffing and going back and forth. And so I don't know if I started it last week. I can't remember. Did we talk about how I started Son of a Witch or I was going
yes.
to?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you talked about it.
I couldn't finish it. So what is Lowe's reading? It's not Son of the Witch anymore.
Was it bad?
It was bad.
I
kept finding, because I was listening to it, and I kept finding my mind wander, like everything but what the author was reading. So I looked it up on the reviews and Reddit just kind of shredded it. It was like, it was terrible, too political. It dragged on, too descriptive. If you don't like that one, don't even try the third one, which is like the Lion's Lair or the Lion's something. They said that, you know, Wicked got good reviews, and then Confessions of the Ugly Stepsisters, which I think is like a Cinderella take. But they were like, yeah, I was like, I really wish I'd have read this before I spent the $20 on the dang thing, because I can't get through it. And I talked to other people, and they were like, yeah, he's very hit and miss with his books. Like it's like he did Wicked and then just kind of gave up on the next two, just like.
So. He's like, I made a shit ton of money with that one, so I don't care as much with the next two.
Because he's got a new book coming out, and I'm like, I don't know, y'all. Just I'll wait for the movie.
Yeah. Read the reviews first.
So now I'm still reading The Villa and still working on my Grimoire, because I got multiple books, whatever. But I did start listening to The Glass Queen, which is a sequel from The Evil Queen, which that one I did love. And this one is a Cinderella story, but now it's starting to connect with the characters from Evil Queen. So they're starting to entwine. All the witches and stuff. And again, she's trying to, you know, people are saying she's got this evil thing in her. And she's like, no, I'm not. I don't want to hurt anyone. So I think sooner or later, she's going to have to, you know, the good versus evil thing. But that one I'm actually enjoying. I can follow along. I understand. So
that one's a hit. The other one was definitely a flop.
Yes.
So don't read that one, you guys. Unless you like really boring books, it sounds like.
Well, I was talking to one of my clients about it, and she's like, girl, I get it. She asked me if I watched The Handmaid's Tale. And I said, I watched like the first two episodes and I couldn't get into it. She's like, me neither. But then I tried it again and got to like episode 3 and 4. She's like, and then I was hooked and did all the seasons, like binged them all. And I said, okay, so maybe I have to try that one again, because I know everybody loved that one. But I never.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it. Yeah, I didn't watch it either. But it is funny how some shows are like that, where it like takes a little bit to like actually kind of get into it.
Yeah, she said there's some new one out, something about. So I think it's like a political thing, but they're in a bubble and they can't leave the bubble until they figure out who shot the president or shot the, I don't know, something or other. And she's like, I watched it. And then I had to call my girlfriends and talk about it. She said, because I didn't quite get what was happening, but they all loved it. I said, okay. I said, I'm not the only one who like can feel off like when everybody loves something. And I'm like, what just happened? Because I don't get it.
You're like, how are you loving this right now?
That's, again, how I felt about the book. So,
yeah. Well, good thing you realized that kind of early on to stop reading it instead of like getting halfway through where you're like, this kind of sucks, but do I want to finish it now that I'm halfway through? And like,
I'm looking at it and I'm like,
go through and hating it.
I got like 10 more hours of Audible. Do I need to put myself through this? But the people.
Right, yeah.
Reddit said, never feel bad for giving up on a book, because if you don't like it, there's like so many more out there. Like, don't waste your time. So I'm like, okay, I won't.
Yeah, because they're never ending. And so if you don't like one, then it's like not even worth it. Yeah.
But let me tell you about a story that is true.
I'm ready.
This is the story of the wrong Carlos.
Ooh, not the right one, the wrong one.
The wrong one. So I got this information from theguardian.com. I also got it from the innocentproject.org, All Crime No Cattle podcast, and then a study by Professor James Lieberman and students from the Columbia Law School. So
shout out.
If you don't like it, blame one of them platforms. I don't know. I'm intriguing, but
we'll love it.
Okay. A few years ago, Anton Scalia was one of the 9 justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, made a bold statement that he said that there has not been a single case, not one, in which it is clear that a person was executed for a crime he did not commit. If such event had occurred, the innocent's name would be shouted from the rooftops. He may have to eat his words because it is now clear that a person was executed for a crime he did not commit, and his name was Carlos de Luna. In 2004, they miraculously chased down every possible lead in the case, interviewing more than 100 witnesses, pursuing about 900 pieces of source material, and poring over a crime scene, photographs, legal documents that were stacked and stand over 10 feet tall. What they discovered stunned even Lieberman, who was an expert in America's use of capital punishment, well-versed in its flaws. It was a house of cards, he said. We found that everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Carlos de Luna was arrested at the age of 20 on February 4th, 1983, for the brutal murder of a young woman named Wanda Lopez. She had been stabbed once through her left breast with an 8-inch lock blade as a buck knife, which had cut an artery, causing her to bleed to death. From the moment of his arrest until the day of his death by lethal injection, which was 6 years later, De Luna consistently protested he was innocent. He went further. He said he had not committed the murder. He said he even knew who did commit it, though. He even named the culprit, notoriously violent criminal called Carlos Hernandez.
Different guy.
See where I'm going with the title?
I got you now.
Spoiler alert. The two Carloses were not just namesakes. They were called the Tacoyas, which in Spanish is referenced in the Little Columbia book that Lieberman wrote, and it talks about how they were the same height, the same weight, and they looked so alike that they were sometimes mistaken for twins. When Carlos Hernandez's lawyer saw pictures of the two men, he was so confused for one another, he didn't even know which one was which, and De Luna's sister even took a second to figure out which one was which.
That's a rough day.
Yeah. So, but let's go back to the beginning of how we got here.
Sounds good.
Just over a month before St. Patrick's Day, on February 4th, 1983, Wanda Jean Vargas Lopez, she was a 24-year-old single mother. She told her family that she'd gotten some good news, but she wanted to share it with them later. Wanda refused to spill the details of the good news because she wanted to celebrate that Friday night after she got off of her shift at work by taking her brother Richard Vargas out for drinks. She then headed out for her 3-to-10 shift that Friday at a local Sigmore Shamrock gas station in Southwest Corpus Christi. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
If you know, you know. Her parents would be staying with her 5-year-old little girl that night. Wanda typically worked those evening shifts alone, and although she only worked there a few months, she was quickly promoted to assistant manager. The Sigmore Shamrock gas station was far from the safest place to work on an evening shift in Corpus Christi. The gas station itself was small and it said in a high crime area in the town's southern district off South Padre Island Drive and Crosstown Expressway. Inside, the security was minimal, if any. Wanda worked the register and the pumps from behind a small counter with one of those little flip countertops. There was no glass barrier, sliding security drawer or shelves, merchandise blocked access to the cashier. There is also no security cameras installed. After all, it's 1983, so video security systems, they probably weren't either affordable or I'm guessing people just didn't really start getting them until like 90s, probably even late 90s. Nowadays, you get security. It's more common at gas stations, convenience stores, neighborhoods. I mean, shoot, people don't F around anymore. They got rings like everywhere.
Big brother, man, watching you everywhere.
Hey, I'm telling you, when my husband's out of town, that ring, it gives me a peace of mind, okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm not complaining because I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't really care, but.
Right. But besides the lack of security, another element of danger for Wanda came in the form of rowdy patrons of a rough gentleman's club across the street called Wolfies.
Wolfies, ooh. Interesting name for that.
Right? This particular club catered to bikers, hellraisers, and bar fighters on a regular basis, many of which would hit up Sigmar or Shamrock as they left the club looking for snacks, beer, and cigarettes. Wanda took her job very seriously, though, and she was willing to do whatever it took to make ends meet for her young daughter. Wanda dropped out of school and got married and had kids at such a young age. A few months after her daughter was born, her husband pulled the good old, "Hey, I'm going to run out from cigarettes. I'll be right back." He never came back.
Loser.
Right. Wanda never heard from again, and she didn't like the hours or the neighborhood, but she needed the paycheck. She also had high hopes of moving to day shift soon or getting a place in a nicer neighborhood. Now, maybe that was good news that she was planning on sharing. Unfortunately, we will never know. Her father would often drive up to the gas station at night and keep a watch until Wanda finished her shift. I mean, now that's a sweet, devoted dad. Like, good job.
Yeah, that's so sweet. Aw.
Yeah, I know, right? A police officer named Robert Megora knew Wanda, and they had gone out, you know, a few times, nothing serious. But as sort of a courtesy, he would also drive by the Sigmar Shamrock on a late weekend night and make sure she was doing okay. According to James Lieberman's interview with Robert, they even developed a hand signal that they could use with each other so that he could stay outside in his squad car and see if she was okay. So again, she's got some, you know, pretty good people around her.
She's got a crew to watch her back.
She did. But unfortunately, neither Robert or her father were watching over Wanda on that Friday night. And unfortunately, Wanda's good fortune was unknowingly about to run out. A little after 8 p.m. on Friday, February 4th, 1983, a frantic 911 call came in to the Corpus Christi Police Dispatch. Quote, "Can you have an officer come to 2602 South Padre Island Drive? I have a suspect with a knife inside the store. He's Mexican. He's standing right here at the counter." Then she whispered, "Can't talk," end quote. The voice asking the dispatcher for aid on the call was Wanda Lopez. This was not the first time that night that Wanda had spoken with the Corpus Christi dispatch, though. Earlier in the night, Wanda had been approached by a concerned customer saying that there was a man outside acting strange and who was wielding a knife. Now, you think if you made a call about that, right then and there, they could have sent a cop car over to be like, "Dude, what are you doing?" Like,
they should have.
Move along, you know, whatever. Obviously, if he wasn't really doing anything wrong, but that's just suspicious activity to me.
Yeah.
Maybe just cruise around there a few times, make sure he
just
was
to see what's happening.
Moved on. Yeah. Especially if it's a young woman, you know, calling. Yes, it's the same guy from earlier. Wanda decided to call the police and report this man. To her surprise, they told her, unfortunately, they wouldn't be able to do anything unless the man came inside and began threatening people. Well, there you go. You happy now, people? I'm sorry. It gets me really mad when the system's like, well, until they do something, this is like a prime example of you wait till they do something that's too freaking late.
Yeah, and there's so many examples of that. It's actually just so annoying.
Yeah. So the guy that they were, you know, too busy to come and, you know, check out. Well, he did come into the Shamrock gas station a few minutes later. And now Wanda was back on the line with another dispatcher as he stood there with the knife out. The dispatcher tried to ask Wanda questions, but she was more focused on the situation at hand. You hear Wanda responding to what the investigators now assume was the strange man, which was a quote, and you could hear, okay, this 85, I don't know yet. She continued to try to answer the man's questions, but eventually the situation escalated, and you can hear Wanda's voice appear to sound desperate. Quote, you want it? I'll give it to you. I'm not going to do anything to you. No, please. End quote. And then Wanda screamed. Next, the only sound that came were muffled 6 seconds of audio that sounded like a struggle, and then the sound of a phone falling from the counter floor. Because, yeah, remember, too, these aren't cell phones, so, I mean, it was probably attached to a wall somewhere, you know, or a countertop.
Right.
So you can't even really be sneaky about your phone call. A few months later, Wanda moaned, and shortly thereafter, someone hung up the phone. Most likely, this was Wanda's attacker. Just a handful of seconds earlier, Kevin Baker pulled up to the Sigmore gas station in his 67 Mercury Cougar. He quickly got out, and he started trying to pump a few bucks into the gas tank and into his collectible muscular car. I added that in because they're like so detailed about it. So,
collectible muscular car.
Their words. I just kind of kept it because I'm like, okay, obviously they want to.
Sounds official.
Right. As it turned out, Kevin was in a hurry that night and he just left for work and he had plans to go out with his wife dancing. The only problem was he had been forced to stay an hour later at work. And he knew his wife was not going to be happy because he was already running late. Kevin reportedly heard a bang from inside the gas station, like a sound of someone smacking the window. Kevin later told police he thought the sound was like a clerk hitting their hand on the front window next to the counter, likely wanting him to pay inside and come in before he started pumping the gas. Yeah, because back in the day, you could pump your gas before you paid. And then too many gas and goes, people had to stop that shit.
I was going to say, people had to ruin that.
He stubbornly tried to pump the gas anyhow and ignored the noise. But when no gas came out, he finally looked up towards the spot where the clerk should have been at the window. And that's where he saw a man with dark hair and dark complexion behind the counter wrestling with a female, the store clerk. A few short seconds later, he realized the struggle was real. And at first, he thought they may have just been messing around. But then he thought to himself, why is he behind the counter? He watched the man drag the clerk by her hair towards a door what looked like to be a back room. Wanda was fighting back with everything she had. Kevin admitted to consider leaving, but he didn't. Instead, he headed for the front door of the store. As Kevin approached the door, he saw a man throw Wanda onto the floor behind the counter. Next, Kevin saw the man stand up, and then the attacker noticed him. It was then Kevin realized he was the only person present at this Sigmore Shamrock, and at that point, the man leaped over the counter and moved towards him, towards the front door. Kevin stood his ground near the entrance. The attacker walked right up to Kevin and told him bluntly, "Don't mess with me. I got a gun." Kevin was wary, even though the man had empty hands, but he thought maybe he did have a gun in his pocket or in his pants. So he didn't say anything. He just stared the man down. A few seconds later, the attacker sprinted off eastward. He turned left at the corner of the building and disappeared into the darkness behind the gas station. A few moments after that, the man sprinted away. Another car pulled up to the Shamrock. Kevin yelled to the driver, "Quick, find a phone, call the police." Now, it's about this time when Kevin noticed the store clerk, Wanda, was staggering to the front door slowly, a long trail of blood dripping down her left side. Kevin grabbed her and helped her down onto the concrete by the entrance. Her left side was quickly becoming saturated with blood. Wanda kept telling Kevin, "Help me, help me." She repeated trying to stand up. Kevin tried to keep her calm and keep her lying down. Kevin had naval training, so his first aid kicked in and he started looking for the wound, and he pulled off Wanda's sweater and discovered the cut of the fabric of her bra near her left breast. Blood was pouring from the hole. From then on, he looked for the wound. Kevin knew she did not have much time. She was losing a lot of blood. He ran into the store. He found a roll of auto wipes and ran back out and tried to pack her wound. As he worked to save her life, police cars, ambulance began pulling up in the parking lot and relieved Kevin from his work. He got up and walked over to the ice machine at the corner of the store and watched alongside other bystanders who claimed to have information regarding the fleeing attacker. Paramedics quickly deducted that the knife wound Wanda sustained was a cut to her artery and chest, as well as puncturing her lung. They had hooked her to a special machine for punctured wounds and began transferring her to a stretcher. Now, a young boy from the neighborhood arrived on his bike, and he told Vargas that he had yelled to the family that Wanda was hurt and to come to the gas station as soon as possible, so her brother Richard left immediately. He arrived on the scene as Wanda began being moved from the concrete to the stretcher and up into the ambulance. He tried to push his way through the police officers to get to his sister, but they held him back and they told him he could see her at the hospital. Everyone Richard asked questions about what went on either didn't know or was not willing to say. Everyone just kept telling him it was a tragedy. And when he went to the windows of the front store to look for clues as to what had happened inside, he didn't see detectives or forensics or a team laying down evidence, markers, dusting for prints, like nothing. Richard claims he saw a huge bloody mess, what looked like two people in street clothes cleaning up bloody floors. They appeared to be working quickly. This struck Richard as very strange. He says, "Why doesn't it look like it does on TV or in the movies?" They were all detectives. Where are all the detectives and forensics and technicians? Like, has anybody, like, in his mind, like, are we looking at evidence? Are we tagging things? Are we, like, taking pictures? Like, where is the team of everybody? Like, why is it just, like, two people cleaning it up?
Right. Because, like, I mean, I've never seen one, like, in person really happening. But it's, like, you know there's, like, a full team of people doing things. So the fact that it's, like, not that is, like, what's going on?
Yeah. And it gets, throughout the story, you'll see it gets fucked up fast.
Oh, gosh.
And we're going to talk about that, you know, through the time of the story. So already there's like immediately after this happened, they have multiple witnesses, but they're all saying different things. So before Richard could investigate what was going on with these employees further, the ambulance pulled out of the parking lot and Richard realized he needed to get in his car and go to the hospital. Police were, in fact, all over the exterior of the scene at this time. They were holding the crowd back and taking statements. Some were interviewing Kevin Baker about what happened. Kevin told the police the attacker appeared Hispanic with dark hair. He was about 5'9". Although he looked maybe 25, he could have been 28. He also said the man didn't look drunk, but rather cold and calculated. He knew what he was doing. Police were also speaking with a handful of witnesses who said they'd seen a similar man. Two witnesses said they saw a man running northbound on Dodge Street, which was a street between the Shamrock gas station and Wolfie's. Another couple also said they saw a similar man jogging east away from the gas station on Frontage Road. So there's multiple stories, multiple people, and there's like five people maybe standing there. And it seems like they all have like different things to say, which has got to be very frustrating. Like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Like it's not organized at all.
Yeah. For instance, Kevin Baker described the man as older, scruffy, wearing dirty clothes, kind of like he was homeless. Others described him as clean shaven, wearing nice clothes. Now, I would think that, I mean, if Kevin was pretty much up close and personal with the guy, he was in the store with him, you know, they had a moment of don't mess with me. You think he would have kind of the clearest vision of what the guy looked like compared to other people who were in the store.
But, right, because he actually, like, saw him. So
that was my thing.
You know. Yeah, his should be the most trustworthy opinion.
That's kind of what
you would think.
The most time. I mean, it was a short minutes, but you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just past, you know. Well, anyway, so therefore, investigators had no other choice but to use a composite description, which was broadcasted on the Be on the Lookout. So the Be on the Lookout reads as follow, quote, Hispanic male, mid-20s to early 30s, 5'9", with a flannel shirt, possible gray sweatshirt. Like, what?
Two different things.
It may be possible a white shirt, could be long sleeves. He might be clean shaven, medium, could have wavy hair, maybe looking for a ride to the club or casino, end quote.
So many description, like it's too many like pieces of description
at this point. Don't even put one out yet, you know, just like I don't know, I'll keep it very basic. 20 to 30s, 5'9", Hispanic man, possibly armed, you know.
Right, they're giving too many like what ifs.
Yeah, so it's now at this point it's around 9 o'clock on Friday. One of the officers on the scene was Ruben Rivera. And he remembered how chaotic this manhunt began for Wanda's attacker. I mean, how can you forget? It's so put together.
Right.
He said he was part of a hodgepodge group, different law enforcement officers from several different agencies, such as wildlife rangers, city police, sheriff deputies, highway patrolmen, and even vice officers that were wearing plain clothes and driving around in unmarked cars. Now they begin surrounding the area several square blocks spread out from the scene. And they begin to collapse the circle inward towards Sigmore Shamrock gas station, looking for someone who could fit the composite description. Which one?
Could be so many people.
As you can imagine, radio traffic was crazy during the next hour. So the search went on. Several false identifications were made, go figure. Several people were apprehended, but then released. Cars were stopped and people inside were checked. Well, I mean, when you don't know what you're looking for.
Exactly.
Lots of people ran because they had warrants or traffic tickets. Almost anyone out that night was treated as a suspect. This resulted in misinformation, confusion, radio chatter, and dead-end leads. At one point, the search team, though they had located the attacker fleeing on foot, and they were involved in a very intense, confusing foot chase that went through a neighborhood almost a mile away to the east side of the scene. Now, this person, whoever they were, ended up eluding the police. Meanwhile, about 8:39 p.m., a call came into dispatch from a neighborhood resident from Teresa Biera. She lived just a street over from the Sigmore Shamrock on East Drive, and she claimed someone was hiding under her truck and then took off southeast. So Constable Ruben Rivera was the first man to the area to spot this particular person. They were hiding under another truck, but a street over on Franklin, trying to hide in a puddle that was kind of underneath the truck. As they closed in on the suspect, Rivera noticed that he wasn't wearing a shirt. He wasn't wearing socks or shoes. He gave up very easily and told the officers, quote, "Don't shoot me. You've got me," he said. The smell of alcohol on the man was overbearing. Officer Millette and Corpus Christi Police was one of the assisting officers on the arrest. He knew the man is Carlos de Luna, a 24-year-old who Millette had arrested for drunken disorderly conduct just 2 weeks earlier at the casino. So now one of the witnesses claims he had an encounter with a man kind of looking like that description, and he was asking for a ride to the casino. Well, the arresting officers took Carlos de Luna back to the scene of the crime where Kevin Baker and other witnesses were still waiting. They cuffed him to the car, and then they drove back over. So the police then asked the witnesses if they could identify the man in the back of the patrol car as the attacker. At first, none of them wanted to face the man. And I mean, this is kind of an effed up thing. Like, you're going to bring a man and cuff him to the car, whether it's in the back seat or whatever, and then tell people go up to him and look at him and say, is this
right?
That's a little like scary, especially if it's in a not great neighborhood. You know, people don't want to be snitches, and now you want us to come face to face, and I have to say right then and there on the spot, yes or no.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. And also, it's not fair to like the person that you're asking about, because, you know, like in this case, but like in other cases too, if it's not that person, it's just not fair to them.
Yeah. But eventually they all relented and they walked over to the patrol car where Carlos de Luna sat. One of the patrol officers shined a flashlight into his face. So again, it's also dark outside, so all you have is a flashlight, right?
Oh my gosh. Top-notch investigators.
And after a few short minutes, four witnesses and Kevin Baker agreed that Carlos de Luna was the man they had seen. Now, side note, Kevin Baker later told James in his book that they all took their time to ID the man. And during this time, investigators grew anxious, and Kevin said after a few encouragement words that were given from the officers, they had questions and some pressure, and they all made the final decision. So, you know, it was probably like, is this him? Is this the guy? You know, he's in the neighborhood. Are you sure? Take a look. Look real good. Think about it. Is this him? Yeah, it is. Huh? This is him? You know, probably went something down like that.
Gosh.
I mean, it seems a little less than ethical to me, but, you know,
what about? Very much so.
So, and this field identification process is known as a show-up identification. So, obviously, it's a thing. James and other people who investigate cases like this don't have high things to say about this field identification or the show-up identifications. After this field identification process, Carlos de Luna was taken to the police station for processing and later on formal charges. He had $149 in his pocket, all wadded up, a wallet, a couple of bucks in it, and some Winston cigarettes. That was it. No weapon, no knife, nothing. Now, back at the hospital, Richard reunited with his parents and Wanda's young daughter. They waited a short while before a doctor came out to deliver the tragic news that Wanda did not make it. The damage and internal bleeding to her artery and her lungs were too severe. And this, like, hurts my heart for her, her baby girl, her parents, just all of it. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, especially, you know, for her child, because like the dad's gone too, so now the mom's gone, and it's just, yeah, just really sad.
They're obviously destroyed by this news. Richard said that the shock just washed over them, and they had to just regroup and grieve for a little while, And then eventually they got it all together when they, by the time they returned home. But then they get home and there's more details about what happened that night. And they didn't hear it from investigators. They heard it from the news, the radio, the newspapers. The recording of the 911 call where she pled for her life was leaked to the media and nobody told them. Like, can you imagine how awful that is, that your daughter's last words are just like all over social media and that's how you have to hear it?
That's so annoying. Like, the fact, like, anytime that happens, it's just so not right. Like, the families need to be the first ones to be informed before anything gets put into the media at all.
You know, I was kind of actually taken back a little bit. And I mean, I guess it was the 80s, but like now it wouldn't surprise me because true crime is at like all-time high.
Right. And,
you know, all the platforms, but there wasn't like social media on platforms like that. So like it legit had to be a 911 dispatcher selling it or releasing it for some payday.
Oh yeah. For it to get out that fast too is like, you know, it has to be somebody there.
Yeah. So, and it gets worse because the first time it played, Wanda's mother and her daughter were in the room. And they heard it on a news cycle. So her daughter had to hear it.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Richard said that it haunted their family and did terrible psychological harm to Wanda's mother and daughter for a while. Which I don't doubt.
Right.
Wanda's probably still trying to recover. And she's, well, older than me right now. But
yeah, because you can't unhear that.
Now, going back to the scene on Friday night, police talked to photographer Joel Infinite and Detective Olivia Escobado. They were among the first people into the Sigmar Shamrock, and they're the ones that surveyed the scene. So it's about this point where it's 9 p.m. on Friday night, and the gas station manager, Robert Stange, was there. And then area supervisor Pete Gonzalez was there, and he reported that he waited outside as they worked. Stange told James in his book that they worked the scene really quickly. Like, at one point, Detective Escobado came out to Pete Gonzalez and inquired how much money he thought was missing from the till. Looking through the windows, Gonzalez told Detective it would be hard to tell with all the blood and all the money everywhere. He hadn't done a full inventory. Later, Gonzalez did do an inventory and estimated that $166 was missing. And he reported his findings to the investigators. As Detective Escobado worked inside the gas station, she drew an interior diagram of the crime scene. And Infinite followed closely by and snapped crime scene photos, the combination of both painted horrific pictures of what actually happened in the store in just a few short moments. Blood, lots of blood. There were footprints in it. Now, there were handprints in it of different shapes. Blood splatter covered all over the ground, behind the counter, misting sprays, large pools, heavy droplets. I mean, it was just a hot mess. A drag mark was made in it. And the attacker had tried to pull Wanda back into the room. Detective Escobado documented and bagged what she believed was the murder weapon. There was a folding buck knife that was found laying near the cash register. Some other small items she found were a partially smoked Winston cigarette butt. Behind the counter was a stray new pack of Winstons on the counter. Perhaps this new pack was something the attacker had been attempting to buy as sort of a ruse before they struck. By 10 p.m., an hour after they had entered the gas station, Detective Escobado and the photographer made their way out. As they walked past Gonzalez and Stage, Escobado reportedly told them, "It's all yours." Both men were shocked. How could you work a scene for an obvious murder, maybe a robbery, that quickly? Both men figured they must have gotten enough evidence that they had suspect that they had the suspect that they had pulled up earlier in the patrol car, and maybe it was just that simple. Stange and the manager from another store got to work scrubbing the whole store from top to bottom in less than 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Brutal. He said, this seems way too fast. Okay, like, you know shit's going to be screwed up.
I already know.
He's like, and you know the interesting thing about Stange's report was that he was going on the inside of the store as one of the detectives, and like one dude was taking pictures. There was no fingerprint team, and there was no blood spreader team. Stange told James about what he'd saw that night, and he said that he had a shockingly good memory, and he described the details of the scene that could only be found in crime scene photos, which Stange never seen. So it's like he can like walk around and look at all these details of all this stuff, and y'all took a couple of pictures in 10 minutes and like, okay, we're done. Like, that just seems very lazy and very like callous. So I don't really give a shit, and
so sloppy.
So angry because some 5-year-old little girl just lost her mom and you guys are being like fucktards about it.
They're treating it like someone like stole candy from a store.
Yeah. So he cleaned the inside of the store. He said it stuck with him hard and he remembered everything. He said it was like imprinted on his brain. The aftermath was just so shocking. Like, hire a crew to clean it. Like, why does this gas station manager have to clean it? Like, you better be paying me freaking extra for that.
For real. He needs like triple time.
Investigators turned over the crime scene report once they were done and all the witnesses to the DA office. After looking over the evidence, they decided to move forward with a capital murder charge against Carlos de Luna. His trial was set for the following month. Now, clearly, they thought this was a slam dunk case. Later, the trial would be postponed due to requests by de Luna's court-appointed attorney, Hector D. Panina. This was to allow for a period of discovery of new evidence, that the new evidence was from de Luna himself. He told the attorney that he had, in fact, been outside the gas station that night and had witnessed the attack through the window. However, de Luna claimed he was innocent and he's not the man that they're looking for. He says, I saw what happened. It freaked me the hell out. I've been in trouble before with the law, so I took off and started hiding because I didn't want to be involved. De Luna also claimed that the murderer was known as an acquaintance of his, and he actually knew him. His name was Carlos, too. The term for the Spanish is called tocoya, which is how he referred to him. He wanted to explain how this other tocoya named Carlos Hernandez also looked exactly like him. A twin, a doppelganger of sorts. The defense team spent months trying to locate Carlos Hernandez that fit de Luna's description, but they were unsuccessful. The Corpus Christi detectives and the county's DA office wouldn't have it either. They thought this was a claim that was preposterous, and the charges stood, and they set a new trial date for the fall of 1983. During de Luna's trial, the prosecution based a huge part of their case on Kevin Baker and the other eyewitnesses' statements positively IDing Carlos de Luna as the silent, even though the crime scene was covered, literally covered in evidence. It's the opinion of the legal experts and James, the research team, that felt the forensics evidence wouldn't hold up for some reason. Now, we're going to stop here next week and we're going to get into more of the tocoyas and the lookalikes, doppelgangers, who is Carlos Hernandez. But the last thing I'll tell you is that when they arrested Carlos de Luna, he didn't have one speck of blood on him. And by speck, I mean, he was checked microscopically for blood evidence, and they found nothing, not on his pants, not on his fingernails, not even his shirt. His shoes were discovered the following day after his arrest, and there was no DNA on him from Wanda.
Gosh. like in like a general spectrum, I get how they thought like, oh, this is our guy. He fits the description. Everybody's the people, the witnesses are saying it's him. And like, he's talking about this other Carlos that looks exactly like him. He's just making this up. But when you like are actually an investigator and like that's your freaking job, you need to look deeper than just like the generic like picture that's in front of you. You have to look at like details, and they clearly were not doing that.
No, this is going to be like next week, you're going to kind of be like, what the shit, dude? Because,
man, I'm already like, what the shit?
Okay, so this would be one. Mm-hmm. And then the other one.
They do look very similar, but like also different.
I mean, yeah, this is just like one thing, but I think it was just like, so here's kind of like one when they changed their look appearances a little bit.
Okay.
And you got to figure, you know, back then also same town, same area, same circle. I guess you could see how they could be similar, but there is to be able to tell the difference if you really tried. But right. I guess maybe to strangers. And then also like on the spot at night with a flashlight.
That's what I'm saying. They put too much pressure on those people to answer right then. And like also it was dark and they were probably frazzled. Like it just was not the correct way to go about things.
Yeah.
The wrong Carlos. They definitely got the wrong Carlos. Where are you, Mr. Carlos Hernandez? Where are you? Will they find you? We'll have to find out next week.
Can't hide. I'm going to find you.
Don't look it up, guys. You have to wait until next week.
Yeah. So.
Well, good story, Lo. I'm intrigued and I want to hear the rest of it, but I won't look it up either. I won't spoil it.
Okay. I believe you.
So you guys can't either.
And Saturday when we're out drinking, don't be trying to be like, so,
what's really the tea? What's up with Carlos, dude?
I'm like, you wait till next week, my friend.
We're like, where was Carlos?
Yeah.
I'll have to wait with the rest of you guys.
You know, no offense against you Texas Corpus Christi people, but I don't know. I feel like some shady people come out of Corpus Christi. Y'all be safe there, okay? Because as you heard, I ding-ding-dinged because we're talking about how Yolanda is about to be released in Corpus Christi. And all you Mexican mamas are waiting to get a little piece of that, which, I mean, I don't blame you. Y'all get her, but
they want to throw the beat down on Yolanda.
It's all over TikTok. They're like, just stay in jail. And it's funny because she probably has no freaking clue because, one, she probably doesn't know what TikTok is. She probably doesn't know social media. She doesn't probably know what's
an app. She doesn't know anything.
Like, she's been in there for so long. Like,
she is about to have her mind blown when she gets out.
Yeah. But that comes out. We find out her destiny on Monday, I think the 30th, or Sunday, the 30th.
Sunday, so yeah.
Next time we record, we'll be able to see what the sentence. Is she free? Is she dead?
Honestly, who knows? If she's free, then she might be.
All I'm saying is, if they let you go, you better just, like, there's a thing called Uber now. And you might want to just take that straight to the airport, hop on that, and just go wherever you can go. California, probably not California or New York, because they're going to be big music things, too.
Maybe, like, Oklahoma.
Nebraska.
Nebraska. Yeah.
Arkansas. you know, no
one of those
states, but it's a little bit maybe easier to hide out in the country land, you know, out in the mountains somewhere.
The country land.
I don't know. I've never been there, so.
Yeah, we love those states, but you've never been there, so no hate.
I just picture it small and peaceful, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I picture her being safer in those places. But who knows what will happen, I guess.
Yeah, I know y'all don't want her either. Or, hear me out, maybe make her go back to Mexico.
They're going to really hate her there.
And I mean, because depending on if she was legal or not, she is a felon now, you know what I'm saying? So maybe they'll expire her green card and she can go back to, but that's probably worse than Corpus Christi. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say that's going to be way worse for her. But who knows? And like, I guess it probably just depends too on how her probation is when she gets out, if she has to stay.
Yep, I don't know. Maybe on the way, pick up Casey Anthony and take her with you.
Please do. I can't with that woman.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. That's like a whole other level of anger as well.
Absolutely. Oh my God. The fact that she even showed her face on TikTok, that's pretty freaking ballsy.
I know. Like, I'm like, what is wrong with you? I can't even begin.
Did you not get the hate in person when you first got out? People were throwing shit at you walking down the street. And you think putting yourself on a social media platform that people are going to love you? The only ones you have are the kids that don't know who you are.
I feel like she saw Gypsy Rose, like, gain a shit ton of followers and stuff when she got out of prison. And got her own, like, reality show and stuff. And she was probably like, I could do that. But it's like, it's very different, bitch. Your situation is very different. Yeah,
she killed her mom after being tortured for years and years and years and years. Not a baby girl who you either accidentally killed or killed and then decided to go party and get tattoos and all this stuff before reporting her missing.
Very different situations. Gosh.
So, all right, well, I am almost ready for bed here because it's been a very busy 2 days and I'm not as young as I once was, people. I'm not as young as I once was.
It's all right, Lo. We will let you go and you can get some rest. Get rest up for partying on Saturday, and then Sunday you can rest again.
Nope, I work.
Oh, Sunday night, you can rest again.
Well, I'll get to sleep in on Saturday, so I'll catch up a little bit.
There you go.
Maybe I'll take a nap before we go out.
Right, power nap.
Oh, my God.
Power naps get the energy up.
All right, well, on that note, this mama's got to go.
Stay creepy, guys.
Bye.
Bye.